Order. Good morning, everyone. We're going to have about an hour-long meeting here out of respect for the commissioner's schedule. He and Mr. Showalter headed to Washington, D.C. today, and we'll be back, and we'll be meeting again, I believe, on Thursday. But ahead of that, as we move into the next phase of the legislative session, which is legislative conference committees and kind of final negotiations for trying to solve our historic shortfall, we wanted to discuss a sheet that the governor handed out in a press conference, I believe, last week. So I'm going to have the page distributed to the members, and then there will probably be some extras here for the public. This should be the public one. So, Commissioner, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Do you have this sheet in front of you that was handed out at the governor's press conference?
Yes, we do.
Okay. So for those who are watching at home and here in the audience, one of the issues last year as we went into final negotiations was that there were serious discrepancies in the underlying assumptions in the budget, different budget numbers. We needed to be on the same page. And it's very clear to us once again this year that if we're not on the same page, we have very little chance of closing the session in a timely manner because we're just arguing round and round about the numbers. And so this sheet actually really got Senator Pogemiller and my attention because it seems to have some curiosities about it. So, Commissioner Hansen, can you tell us who prepared this sheet for the governor?
Madam Speaker, members, the sheet was prepared by the Department of Management and Budget, which I oversee. It was prepared by the Budget Division, which is the responsibility of Assistant Commissioner and Budget Director Jim Showalter. And it was put together, I think, the middle of last week based on information, based on what your targets were the week before. Since that time, you have filled in. With bills, and our system is a little more updated as to what you are doing. But I couldn't agree with you more that we usually get to this time of year, and there are getting us on an apples to apples comparison. And this year is a little more complex than in the past. It's complicated by two of the three of us have the K-12 shift. How you characterize that? In the governor's recommendations, we merge the health care access fund into the general fund. You do not. So that has, that can give you a different interpretation of expenditures and revenue. And then the governor's appropriation bonds also. So all of these factor into making it a complex story, and which is why we're probably talking here today to try to start the process of clarifying that.
So, Mr. Showalter, did you prepare this sheet for the governor?
Madam Speaker, me and my staff did prepare this sheet. Yes, it was in response to a question that we had, and we tried to use the best information we had, and that's literally the information on that sheet was about 2 weeks ago. It was prior to some of the bills being prepared. We were trying to make estimates as to what was happening and try to create a very preliminary estimate. As you said, I think initially, this is an ongoing understanding of each of the three positions. This was our first attempt to understand what was going on.
So, Mr. Showalter, would you characterize this as a final product then? It sounds like it's more a working document.
Madam Speaker, that is exactly right. It is very much a working document. Even we've been continuing to try to understand each of the three positions, have tried to update those even in this last couple of days, and we'll continue to be working with your staffs to understand each of those three positions so we can get an apples-to-apples comparison.
Well, maybe we should work on it a little bit together then, and I have some questions. In the revenue side of things, under 10 and 11 for the governor, I'm just wondering, was the stabilization counted in that section as revenue?
Madam Speaker, I believe the stabilization funds on this chart were included on the spending side as portions of the expenditure changes.
So when you were getting to the $33 billion, $146 million there, how did you account for that in the governor's number?
That figure should be pretty familiar. That is looking at the governor's spending as recommended. The 146 is the revenue figure, and that includes the revenues that are included in his budget recommendations that incorporate some of the health care access fund revenues that are proposed to be merged into the general fund. So that includes both sets of revenues.
So, Mr. Showalter, were carry forwards included in that number?
Madam Speaker, I believe they were.
Is that typically the way we deal with carry forwards, Mr. Showalter?
Madam Speaker, no. As I said, this was a very rough preliminary cut at what was going on, and no, that wouldn't be. It's part of the resources. I think the correct terminology that we'd normally talk about is resources. We're preparing a final document of some sort.
Okay. So let's see. Then let's move down here. I'm a little bit concerned about the House number. It just seems different than what we maybe would have come up with. So maybe the carry-forward accounts were part of that, Mr. Showalter. What else might you have included in that?
Probably part of the difference, Madam Speaker, is simply at that point in time, not all of the House position was even apparent. So it's not even just what categories are in here. It was even our understanding of what the split between revenues and expenditures would be. We were working off of targets at that point in time. So that we did not have the committee actions to try and understand what was going on.
So, Mr. Showalter, can you tell me if the governor uses a delayed payment to school districts, and we do as well, do you count that in the revenue side of things in this document?
I'm sorry, Madam Speaker, which revenues?
The delayed payment to school districts. Are you counting that as revenue in this?
Madam Speaker, the shifts, are you referring to the K-12 shifts, the aid payment and property tax recognition shifts, essentially maintaining the obligations but paying later, would show up as a spending savings on these sheets. But the spending figures really are talking about the bottom line spending numbers that you would see on a fund balance prepared by our department. Similar documents are prepared by Mr. Marks, Mr. Mossman, trying to look at the net spending changes in any given year.
So the
shift basically takes those spending, for the audience's sake, takes the spending and pushes those obligations and liquidates those obligations in future fiscal years rather than paying for them up front.
I'm going to ask one other question, then I'm going to let other members
Madam Speaker,
ask some
if I
questions.
Could
yeah,
make
sure.
One comment. I think one of the things you should know, the governor's $33.1 billion number would include, since we merged the health care access fund, it would count, you know, the revenue piece would include that portion of the, the provider tax that we collect. So, what you're probably remembering is that there should be on the sheets that your fiscal analysts are carrying, you separate out the health care access funds, so there's probably more difference between the governor's revenue number and yours.
So I'm going to go down to the expenditure side of things just quickly here, and I'm particularly interested in the governor's 10 and 11 number, fiscal year 10 and 11. And I'm just wondering, does that include the debt service payments on the debt borrowing, Mr. Showalter?
Madam Speaker, it does not.
It does not.
The governor's debt service payments, as originally proposed in his budget, are paid by the appropriation bonds. Those appropriation bonds are deposited into the debt service accounts for some reasons that more for accounting and technical reasons, are put into that account. As a result, the general fund doesn't spend the debt service. Since that proposal isn't in either of the House or Senate positions, you see net savings on the governor's spending numbers for what I think would be characterized as a revenue, but it is not a revenue going into the general fund. It does affect the spending obligations of the general fund.
Madam Speaker, this is what I was alluding to at the beginning of our conversation. There's a couple of items that show the governor spending less that aren't necessarily meet the strict definition of a budget cut or a programmatic cut. As Mr. Showalter said, the appropriation bonds, we sell the bonds and then the debt service is paid in another fund. So it's not a general fund. So the general fund shows very little being paid for debt service. So the general fund actually shows a reduction. It's not a budget cut. It's a spending reduction. I know it's getting into semantics. And then the K-12 shift, which the House employs as well, it results in a reduction in spending, a reduction in an obligation in the current biennium. But is it a cut? Well, no, because we're still paying it in the future. That's why, everybody refers to it as a shift. Those are two examples of where our spending numbers get reduced, but they're not actually, meet the classic definition of a budget cut.
So could you just, one follow-up to that. So there's this special account for the purpose of selling and receiving the proceeds of the debt piece of the governor's budget. And then the payment on that debt, which goes on for 20 years, Mr. Showalter, can you remind me how much that is in 10 and 11 and then 12 and 13?
Madam Speaker, I can't remind you. I can try to get that number. I can certainly get that number. I don't have that here. We're trying to recall exactly what the right number is. But certainly you're right. Your major point is right. The revenue that is paying off those bond obligations is based upon an appropriation promise from the state saying we plan to appropriate funds in future years out of receipts coming into the state. Those lost revenues would show up on the general fund side. So that would diminish the governor's revenue numbers in 10, 11, 12, and 13, and beyond.
Since we don't know, Mr. Showalter, since we don't know the exact amount, remind me, the governor books how much money from that the debt piece of this, and how much does it cost us in interest then?
Madam Speaker, the net figure is, I believe, $920 million. That the gross sale was over $1 billion. The difference is the couple of payments that would occur during this biennium, so that the initial obligations, once that debt is released, those payments would go out from the state, and on a net basis, the general fund would benefit by about $920 million. The assumptions on interest are obviously flexible at this point in time. We've talked with our Assistant Commissioner for Debt Management, talked with some outside parties to try and understand how this kind of instrument would be viewed. I believe the assumption was in the range of 5%, but it's in the range, but I'm not sure the exact percentage.
So Commissioner Hansen, just to be clear, that would mean that if it nets out at $900 million, it's about $1 billion, that really this accounts for $1 billion in revenue into the governor's budget proposal.
Yes.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. Hansen, were you at the governor's press conference?
I was not.
Well, I saw it. He said that the Senate actually increased spending while he cut spending. I'm asking both of you as professionals, is that an accurate statement?
I haven't actually watched
Commissioner. His
press conference, but I'm looking
If the governor said that the Senate increases spending while he cuts spending, Is that an accurate statement? Because that's what this sheet portrays. You want to talk to your lawyer?
Madam Speaker, Senator.
Commissioner.
I have looked at about 8 different updates of the spreadsheet since I looked at this one, since the middle of last Wednesday. So, and I wasn't at the press conference. I briefed the governor that morning, gave him the sheet, and then realized there was a press conference. So now I'm going back all of the versions. It's not that I don't need to talk to my lawyer. I'm trying to recreate in my mind what we knew last Wednesday as opposed to what we know now.
Commissioner, I'm most interested in whether the statement is factual or not. Forget the numbers. I mean, forget what the governor did with this sheet. The speaker's just proven this sheet is full of, well, let's put it this way. A sheet can be done more accurately than this.
Well, it was a draft.
Okay.
The mistake was
so now
that
I just want to know, is it, you know what the Senate budget is. Does the Senate actually increase spending in its budget while the governor cuts spending? We just voted on this budget in the Senate over the last few days.
We have
a lot of senators are just stunned that the governor thinks we increased spending.
If you look at it on a biennium,
Hansen?
You know, and again, we have now, you know, in retrospect, this would have said, you know, not just draft, but extremely draft. This, if you look at it from a biennial, and that's what I, one of the updates that I have. You know, and again, we have the, you know, you compare it by biennium, Senator Pogomiller, or you can compare it to forecast. The sheet I have in front of me now shows the Senate with a 1.7 reduction from biennium to biennium in the current, in 10 and 11.
Okay. Senator Pogomiller.
I think you already answered this, but I just want to make it real clear. The 1.3... what I thought was a shift. Is that a shift or a cut? And I
shift.
Think you just told the speaker that's not a cut, it's a shift.
I consider that a shift. It is not. Okay. It is spending, you know, it's obviously, and you you know, it's not. It's a general fund. It's less general fund spending in the current biennium. But it's not a cut. It's not a programmatic cut in the classic sense that the Senate has.
So it is accurate to say that if it's a shift, the governor can claim he's increasing education spending because it's a shift. If it's a cut, then the governor's actually cutting education spending by $1.1 billion. So you, the characterization that you believe is correct as professionals is that this is a shift,
yeah,
not a cut.
Madam Speaker,
Hansen.
Senator Pogomiller, I refer to it as a shift because it is spending. It's not avoiding the spending. It is spending that is going to occur a little later.
So any characterization that that's a cut is just inaccurate in your professional view?
I don't refer to it as a cut. I refer to it as, on our sheets, reductions in spending.
Okay,
and it is a reduction in the general fund. I don't use the word cut.
Okay, but on the sheet that the governor handed out at his press conference, he called it a cut. He had to, otherwise he can't get to that number. I think the speaker went over this, but I just wanted to clarify. Borrowing against future appropriations to pay back current spending, to pay back current borrowing. Is that a cut? Is that a spending cut?
Well, it is.
Commissioner?
We are still paying the debt service in another fund.
But is it a spending cut? The only issue is
I wouldn't refer to it as a spending cut.
Okay.
We were bringing revenue in, and we're finding a purpose for it, and we had to move it outside. So it is, again, Senator Pogomiller, I refer to it as spending. It's a reduction in general fund spending.
but not a spending cut. It's not a permanent cut in spending.
You're looking at is a, you know, like you cut K-12 education in the current biennium, and that cut carries forward into 12 and 13.
That's a cut.
I would consider that a cut. It is spending that it is a action that you take that it reduces spending in this biennium and obviously reduces spending in the next biennium.
And I think the speaker went over this, the healthcare access fund transferring to the general fund while keeping the tax on providers. That can't be considered a cut either.
Well,
it's a transfer of money from one fund to another. That's not a cut.
But we cut, Madam Speaker, Senator Pogemiller, in our, and I know that it is a classic disagreement that we go round and round with all the time. But in our recommendations, we merge the two. And
correct.
A cut is a cut, whether it's in the general fund. I feel like this is a Dr. Seuss.
No, Commissioner, I'm not trying to pin you on
no,
the Commissioner, I'm not trying to work. I'm not even disagreeing with you on whether you have where you count this.
But we count.
But
it
you
in
can't
the
character. You can't characterize a shift of the health care access fund from one fund to another as a cut. That's all I want to get at.
But we cut, Madam Speaker, Senator Pogemiller. I would consider that the we cut about is it 600? We cut $600 million out of the healthcare access fund. I would consider that a cut. That is
to those services. Absolutely.
Right. But the money coming in is a revenue.
Absolutely.
I wouldn't count the remaining, you know, it's $1.1 billion. You can't count the five. All right, well, you're smiling. Go ahead.
So what I need to know, and I just want you to calculate this for us, so you don't have to do it right now. How much actual general fund spending is permanently cut in the governor's budget? And how does that compare to the Senate's number? You can do it with the $800 million in or out, either way, because we're both doing the same thing with the $800 million. And if you can come up with a number that shows that the governor is cutting more than the Senate, you will really boggle our minds, because the difference in K-12 is $646 million. The difference in higher ed is $34 million. The difference in ag and vets is $12 million. This is the Senate reducing permanent spending more than the governor. Every single budget, other than health and human services, which we debated yesterday, where the governor cuts $853 more than us, every single other budget, economic development could go either way, it looks like here. We both have problems in that budget in terms of how you count those, permanent versus non-permanent. But state government, the government increases state government $24 million. The Senate and the House cut it almost $50 million. Transportation, the Senate cuts it $26 million more than the governor. Public safety, $87 million more than the governor. Environment and energy, $24 million more than the governor. Ag and vets, $12 million more. Higher ed, $34 million. K-12, $646. And the governor says he is cutting more than we are? Commissioner, as a professional, we just can't let that stand. That is such an outrageous statement.
Madam Speaker,
Commissioner.
Senator Pogemiller, if you... And again, I understand what you're saying. But if you look at the word cut, I mean, you've probably read every statute over and over again. But when you look at the general fund, the
Commissioner,
amount...
Commissioner, let's correct that. He's written half of the statutes, okay?
That's true, yes.
Commissioner, I will say this. I chaired the K-12 committee for 8 years. And I know the difference between a cut in K-12 and a budget gimmick in K-12, because I spent years paying back the previous budget gimmick.
I know you did.
And so, Commissioner, I take this very seriously.
I know you do. We've talked
enough
about this.
And there is no way, as the Speaker mentioned, there is no way that we can resolve this budget if we can't even agree on what the facts are. And for the governor of the state to argue that his bond proposal, his health care access fund shift, his school aid shift, those are cuts because he wants to look like he's cutting the budget. We can't do that. Whether we do those ideas or not, we can't sit here and acknowledge those as permanent cuts because they're not.
Senator Pogomiller, hang on, Commissioner. I just want to correct one thing. The governor's health care access fund proposal would not be a shift. A shift would be something you would intend to pay back. And, Commissioner, do you have any intention of paying back the health care access fund?
Madam Speaker, our proposal is a permanent transfer into the general fund.
Other people might call that something different. Okay, Commissioner.
I know it's a you've said that before. But, Senator, just the point I wanted to make is whether you call it a cut or whether you use some other terminology, the general fund bottom line, I mean, as we explain it, we put asterisks so that we understand and we're on the same page. But your education cut, which is over $900 million.
In the out years. In the first biennium, it's $453 million.
Okay, well, the $450 million in the 10 and 11 biennium has the same impact as the first $450 million of the school shift in the current biennium. You know, it has a different impact. And you and I talked about this a few weeks ago. Obviously, it has a different impact in the tails. My point is, you know, when you look at, you know, what the governor's doing is looking at the bottom line in the general fund in the current biennium.
Well, Commissioner.
Senator Pogomiller.
This is why we're supposed to be looking at four-year balance, isn't it? As Commissioner of Finance. Because if you just look at 2 years, you can get away with telling people that a budget shift is getting them somewhere. But if you look over 4 years, it becomes real apparent to everybody that a budget shift doesn't get you anywhere. It doesn't cut your budget if you're conservative. It doesn't balance your budget. That's why it is so important to characterize these things accurately. And the simple fact is that characterizing the governor's budget as making more permanent cuts than the Senate is just not accurate. Secondly, it is a fact that the governor's budget doesn't balance over 4 years. It's $2.6 billion off. Whereas the Senate budget that we have now passed, and we sat in his office a couple weeks ago, he scoffed at he said, "You're never going to pass that budget." Well, Commissioner, we passed it. No budget gimmicks, permanent cuts, more than him, and yes, tax increases. But at least our budget is honest and straightforward. That's what a Commissioner of Finance should want. You can disagree with what we did, but you should want a factual, honest balancing of the budget. And that is not what the governor of the state has done. And I wouldn't get so excited except for the fact that he shows up at a press conference and claims that he cuts more than we cut. And his commissioner of revenue, who I'm going to have the opportunity to visit with soon, was on Almanac Friday and said his budget balances. It does not. It is $2.6 billion short of balancing. Criticize the Senate for raising taxes. That's fair because we did. But don't criticize the Senate for not having a balanced, honest budget, because we're going to criticize the governor of the state for not having an honest, balanced budget.
Commissioner, he'll also criticize the House. So Representative Coles, he'll criticize the House. Commissioner.
Madam Speaker, Senator Pogomiller, the point I was making, and I obviously want it accurate. That's what I'm all about. But I think the my point was that the whatever we, you know, the shift or the appropriation bonds, you know, it almost becomes more of a 12 and 13 issue than a 10 and 11 issue. Your permanent cut, a permanent cut has the same weight as a one-time resource in the current biennium, but the permanent cut carries forward into 12 and 13. I see the discussion that we are having as a continuation of, it was 3 weeks ago, after the last forecast, the discussion we had about, you know, structural balance in the tails. It's a continuation.
And then, Commissioner, thank you, Madam Speaker. Just one last question. As Commissioner of Finance and as a professional, confirmed by the Senate, so you work for all of us, do you think we should have four-year balance? or do you think we should just kind of fake it?
Madam Speaker, Senator Pogamiller, I would be lying if I said it wasn't the holy grail for a finance commissioner to have structural balance in the out years. There's nothing I would love more. Whether in these times, whether we're able to make these type of decisions going forward in the midst of a deep recession and job cuts, I don't know if there is the ability to come to an agreement to do that. So I would prefer as much progress as possible.
Okay, and Commissioner, I don't know if there's an ability to come to that agreement with the governor of the state either, but the state Senate has just passed a structurally balanced four-year, the holy grail, as you just described it. The state Senate just did it.
But at the, well, I'll leave it at that.
Representative Coles.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Senator Pogamiller, I haven't had the pleasure of either serving with you in your body or spending a lot of time in budget negotiations with you. But, I mean, clearly, Senator Pogamiller, your feelings have been hurt, and you know, I'm sorry that happened.
No, Madam Speaker, don't trivialize it, Representative. Okay. This is a factual matter. My feelings don't matter. The facts matter.
Madam Speaker, and Senator Pogamiller, I think that your feelings do matter because you're clearly very upset. And I guess my question or my concern is I'm not sure how productive this is.
Well,
what I want to see, Madam Speaker, is I want to see the legislature do its work. Senator Pogamiller, I'm not familiar with the ins and outs of the budget that you passed, but as you described, the governor has proposed, and I was just looking at the Constitution here, and you know, we as the legislature actually have to enact. The governor proposes. The governor doesn't cut. The governor doesn't cut a thing until we send him bills that we agree on through the conference process. He only cuts by signing those bills. He only acts by signing or vetoing the legislation we send him, Senator Pogamiller. And so what I want to see us do is spend our time figuring out how to get bills to the governor that I sure hope he'll sign. And so the Senate maybe has passed a budget that's structurally balanced for the next 4 years. I think you know, Senator Pogamiller, the Speaker referred to it. Our budget doesn't quite get us there yet. We've got some problems in the out years with the tails, as we discussed at length on our tax bill. And the budget gimmick you refer to, in the House, we not only criticized the governor, but then we doubled down on him and increased that budget gimmick, to use your term. And so, Senator Pogamiller, I want to see the legislature, the House and the Senate, sit down and figure out what we're going to send to the governor. I hope the governor will agree through Commissioner Hansen and others to participate in that process. But we can sit here and complain about what the governor's saying, but I'm not sure how productive that is. Let's do the work of the people of the state of Minnesota, the people who sent us here. Let's get the work done, and let's get as much participation from the governor as he's willing to give us. And Senator Pogamiller, I certainly hope that Commissioner Hansen will be true to his word. I suspect that he will, that he wants us to have the information we need to make our decisions. But we all know where the governor stands on general fund tax increases. And, I mean, if we want to send him those bills, he's going to veto them. But you know, Senator Pogamiller, I just don't know that this discussion we're having here, we're bringing the commissioner in to chastise him for what the governor said or didn't say. I wasn't at the press conference. I haven't heard it. You obviously, you know, watched it or saw it. And, you know, I'm sorry that you're upset about what the governor said, but let's get our job done. Commissioner Hansen, I guess my hope is that as we move forward and set budget targets for the conference committees, that you and Mr. Showalter and others will provide us with the information we're requesting so that we can, as a legislature, put together budget targets. I think the governor's been fairly clear on what he will not support. I think he's also given some indications over the last few days about some things that he's willing to at least consider changing in his proposal. And so, Commissioner Hansen, I guess my question for you is, you know, will you and your department and your staff provide the legislature with the information we need so that we can do our job, set our conference committee targets, and get our work done?
Commissioner.
Madam Speaker, Representative Coles, I think I've worked in this process a long time, and I have learned at this time of year that the numbers can say different things. And it is my responsibility to explain, to provide you with the numbers and give you the asterisks so that you can make the points you want to make. As the in the discussion that the Senate Majority Leader and I just had, I think can be boiled down to a couple of simple statements. The governor's reductions in general fund spending, when you count all reductions, are greater than the Senate or the House. But when you look at actual programmatic cuts, the Senate has higher programmatic cuts. The governor's general fund number is reduced by the appropriation bonds and the K-12 shifts.
Madam Speaker, thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker and Commissioner, thank you. I guess my request of you is that you do continue to provide us with that information on a timely basis. And, you know, Commissioner, you and I have had some conversations about, you know, my thoughts about how we do this. And, Senator Pogomil, you might be somewhat surprised to hear that I actually may be a little bit more aligned with some deeper cuts than where the House is at and maybe even where the governor's at. So I want to see us get our work done. I want to see us, the legislature, the House and the Senate, do what the Constitution requires us to do, which is send bills to the governor. He doesn't cut.
Madam Speaker.
Until we send him the bills. So, Madam Speaker, thank you for you know, indulging me here, and I look forward to getting some work done.
Madam Speaker.
Well, Representative Coles, I will just tell you that I do think it's important that the governor of the state of Minnesota, the chief executive of the state, actually distribute accurate information to the press. And I think we've proven pretty well today that this document wasn't ready for prime time. And I'll just say it. I think the document was distributed to the press to muddy up the waters about who's doing what and when. And, Representative Coles, you're also correct. You haven't been in the room with the negotiations. You know, maybe your caucus would like to send you in. Because what you'll see is that if we don't agree on the basic numbers, the basic facts of the budget, we cannot move negotiations further along. What happens is basically people chase their tails for days upon days. So if you think this is a waste of time, Representative Coles, welcome to the big table, because this is what happens. We get to decide, and we're going to do it publicly this year in this venue, what the agreement on each of these lines are, who has what, who's bringing what to the table, who's reducing what where, and then we can really get to agreement. I actually think that the governor is a former majority leader of the House, and as the governor of the state, knew exactly what he was doing when he passed out a document that was not complete or accurate.
Madam Speaker, it was the best snapshot we had
Commissioner.
At that time.
The best snapshot you had?
Yes. At that point, we were working off the targets.
Commissioner, the best snapshot to include the carry forwards in budgets, which you've never done before, the best snapshot to not account for the debt service on things? I mean, Commissioner, come on.
But I think the debate we have had since then, you know, we've established, and this has been helpful, the difference between the programmatic approach that the Senate took and some of the items that lead to a larger general fund reduction as opposed to a programmatic cut. I think that's a little more apparent, that the impact of the health care access fund, I think we're going to have these type, if we're going to do this in public, these type of discussions are going to happen. I mean, to characterize it, I don't think we deliberately muddied the waters. It's the best information we had at that time.
Madam Speaker.
Sarah Clark.
And I do beg to differ, too, with you, Representative Coles. I mean, I think we have a similar goal. And Commissioner Hansen, I am concerned about the last thing you said, because the best information you would have had at that time was our targets and what our committees were working on. Our targets were very public. They showed 7% across-the-board cuts. Again, whether you like that or not, they showed that with some softening because of the federal funds. They were pretty – we stuck true to what was on those pieces of paper. So the best information – would have been what we had publicly given out and what we've given you. But I do believe it matters because we worked really hard to try to come up with a balanced approach that would still provide adequacy of funding for our state, that through these tough times, as you were talking about, Representative Coles, we need to be making sure that we have adequate funding for people who are suffering out there. And the information, frankly, that is given to the governor and that he is giving out to the public, it's really important that he's given the best information possible, not even just a guess of an idea, because people believe him. People listen to him, and they believe him. The words that he says, whether they're accurate or not, are the words that people will think are real, that are true. And it's important, as Madam Speaker, you were saying, that people have a real sense of what these numbers are. And the information that was played out is very problematic. The other thing is, at this point, the governor's proposals, his proposed cuts in general, really rest on those health and human services cuts, the health care cuts, the health care access fund, the merging, as you're calling it, and real cuts that over time are going to play out. And without those, and again, that didn't even get introduced in the Senate, and it was soundly rejected on the floor of the Senate yesterday, there's not much left there. We rejected that because those cuts would have meant a lot of harm to a lot of people. And without those cuts, it's kind of the linchpin for everything else. So as we're moving forward, I think it's very important that the information that we have publicly tried to share, that we have made sure and bent over backwards, that Sarah Cohen and his finance division have done, is what's really gotten out there, not something else.
President Carlson?
Madam. Yeah, Madam Chair, I would like to go back to what the purpose of this paper was. Commissioner, you keep emphasizing that it was a draft, but was it prepared for the governor for a press conference? And the reason I ask that, I work with our fiscal analysts, and they will caution me if something is a draft, and I'm very careful not to go public with it until we finalize those numbers. And what was the role of drafting that document? Was it for a press conference? And if it was, then I think the charges here were very serious in terms of not accurately portraying what the House and Senate were doing relative to the governor.
Commissioner?
Madam Speaker, Representative Carlson, I initially responded to and sat down with the governor on, I think the 23rd was last Wednesday, talked with him a little about this, walked through the sheet, and then he decided to have a sit-down with the press. It wasn't necessarily a press conference, but an informal sit-down to walk through some of these, the snapshot we had at that time.
Madam Chair, was the governor cautioned then that this was a draft by you during that briefing? Because I'm viewing it as I listen to the dialogue here that if this truly was a draft, then it was either misused by the governor or it was crafted as a political document, as some have said, that actually then deliberately misleads the public in terms of what's happening relative to the House, Senate, and governor. And I think it's important to understand what your role was then in terms of preparing this for the governor and what kind of cautions you may or may not have given him prior to having a press conference that has misled folks.
Commissioner?
Madam Speaker, Representative Carlson, it is, frankly, it's all a draft until we get the final bills in place, that these numbers change all the time, that as your fiscal analysts do with you, we know more by the end of this week. The syncing of the numbers between the House and the Senate, the governor will be more firm, but I am guessing is anything ever really something is either more or less draft. And at that point, we did. And while, yes, the targets are firmly established, by the time you add the spreadsheets into our system and they've worked their way up into the overall sheet, things change costs. There's work between the our fiscal analyst at our finance department, DHS or whatever, and yours, and numbers change. And that goes on all the time. I don't know if we ever really have, we're close.
Well, Madam Chair, I think we understand that, but you know what? What I'm really trying to get a handle on is whether this was a political document or whether it was truly a document prepared by your department to convey to the governor a draft of where you perceive things to be. And it sounds to me more like it was prepared as a political document, and if it was, it certainly misled the Minnesota public. I'll just stop there.
Senator Metzen?
Yeah, I'll shift gears a little bit if it's all right. On the $1 billion borrowed against the Tobacco Endowment Fund, I think the speaker asked the question. I don't know if we got the total answer, but
Senator Metzen, can we just be clear? It's not against the Tobacco Endowment. It's just against the general fund.
All right. Well, whatever.
Madam Speaker.
But we're borrowing $1 billion, is that
yes.
correct? And the billion, I want to know what will it cost with the 5%. Is the billion going to turn to $2 billion with interest over the years? And we're not borrowing against the tobacco fund, I guess. We're borrowing the money. A one-time borrowing money of $1 billion at 5% over how many years, Speaker?
20 years.
And so that's going to cost somebody another $1 billion. Is that correct? I better learn these funds because I was told that that's – but anyway, that's not – the issue is how much is $1 billion going to cost the taxpayers and others over the next 20 years.
Mr. Showalter, do you have a number for us? How much this costs? I've seen estimates
of double?
$600 to $700 million. Is that correct?
Madam Speaker, Senator, that sounds like in the right ballpark. I know we've testified and provided that information. I do not have that information here.
I just think, Madam Speaker, we haven't had enough discussion on this big number that that we have to pay back over 20 years.
Well,
huge number.
Well, Senator Metzen, we actually had a vote on the House floor about this issue, and you will hear some claim that it wasn't the governor's proposal, but I think I can highlight for you the two-sentence fragments that weren't the governor's proposal in terms of the amendment. And it was a very interesting discussion. And I should mention that Chair Houseman actually had a hearing on this, I think a couple-hour hearing on the proposal as well. And when we took the vote on the House floor, the vote was, I believe, 130 against and 2-4. And, you know, I think what we're establishing here, and there's some basic facts that have to be established. The governor brings revenue to the table. He does it in a way that borrows and then repays it. And it's a fairly expensive proposal then. When you put that together in terms of how much the actual cost to the state is, it's a high-cost proposal. There is the it's not a shift. It's a taking. I guess that's the polite way of saying it, the taking of the health care access fund. And, you know, that without relieving the providers of the tax, it's a taking because it's no longer intended for its purpose. Obviously, the House and Senate have each come up with their proposals of how they would provide revenue into the budget as well. And so I think that, you know, there's just some basic things here. And one basic piece of this is that everybody has revenue in their budget. Commissioner, would you agree with that, that everyone brings forms of revenue to their budget?
Madam Speaker, we bring health care access fund money to the general fund. So in that regard, yes.
And you bring your debt?
Yes, other resources. Yes, yes. The appropriation bonds would be new resources.
Okay. So,
yes.
Senator Pogemiller.
Madam Speaker, Commissioner, the facts do matter.
They do.
That's the point. I want to make sure you know you haven't hurt my feelings.
I like you anyway, Senator.
This is business. This is not personal. But the facts matter in a democracy, Representative Coles. The facts matter in a democracy. And anytime somebody tries to create their own set of facts, I do think we should get excited and upset about that. I do. Because I think that destroys a democracy. When you lie to the public, when you mislead the public, that damages the fabric of our basic institutions. And so it's important that as professionals, we get accurate information and not misleading information. And I wanted to point out one last thing, Commissioner. It's already been pointed out that the governor's revenue on the bond has no legislative support. I guess it had one vote in the House.
Two
votes in the House out of 130-some. So we're going to have trouble delivering on that, apparently. I can tell you that the governor's proposal to cut depending on how you want to count it, $1.3 billion or $1.7 billion out of health care. We took that to a vote on the Senate floor yesterday, and it got not even a majority of Republicans voted for that. It only had 9 votes. So I think that part of the governor's budget is severely compromised in terms of our ability to deliver that to him.
We did health care access.
The House apparently and the Senate, neither of us agree that you should, I want to use neutral language, take the health care access money and use it for a different purpose. So we have a challenge here. And I think to the extent that there's a little more realism about balanced budgets and a little more acceptance of the recognition that we should have a 4-year balance from the Finance Department, the Senate has delivered nirvana, as you described it. I understand we're not going to get nirvana.
The Holy Grail.
Holy Grail?
Holy Grail.
Oh, I'm
not
sorry. Oh, so that's
probably a little bit more like the Holy Grail than nirvana.
So, Holy Grail.
The
Holy Grail of budgeting. I'll say publicly right now, I think the Senate understands that the governor is not going to support the Holy Grail of budgeting. We understand that. But we'd like him to get a little closer than not balancing the budget over 4 years. We should at least balance the budget over 4 years, and if we need to use some what we would consider less than optimal techniques to get to that, it would still be the right thing to do for the state of Minnesota and for our citizens, regardless of political affiliation. Thank you, Commissioner.
Madam Speaker, if I could just comment on that. Senator Pogermiller, I think you touch on the issue of 12 and 13, and that is an issue, but I take real issue with them. Any comments that we are politicizing or playing with the numbers. The bottom line is, whether you call it a cut or we call it a shift, the governor has more general fund reductions in the current biennium than you do or you do. Now, we've established, Senator, that there's a difference between a programmatic cut and and using the words cut versus shift. But when you add in whether you like it or not, it's the governor's proposal, the appropriation bonds, the K-12 shift, the stabilization backfill, all of that, our reductions in general fund. Now, I'm not saying cut, reductions is greater than yours,
Commissioner. Just
Senator Pogermiller.
It's one last point,
if I was even willing
to grant you that.
Well, you should, because that is the numbers. Now, I admit 12
Commissioner,
and 13.
Commissioner.
We are going to have plenty of time to determine the numbers in the next series of meetings, believe me.
Commissioner.
And I think people are looking forward to it. Senator Pogermiller.
Commissioner, do you think it's wise to parade one-time reductions and shifts as solving the balancing and balancing the budget over the long term? Do you think that's a wise thing to tell Minnesotans?
Commissioner.
Madam Speaker, Senator Pogermiller, as I said, I like my predecessors, the Holy Grail for a finance commissioner. I was never more proud than May 30th, 2007, when we had not only the surplus, we had a positive balance, but we had your inflation that you're so concerned about covered as well. And so I was feeling pretty large.
Okay, Representative Demmer, wanna?
Yeah. Well, Madam Speaker, I haven't said anything. I got to weigh in.
Pardon?
I got to weigh in. I haven't said anything here. I've got.
You don't have to. There's no requirement of that, Representative Demmer.
Sometimes everything's been said, but not everybody has said it. You know how that works.
We know how the House floor works.
and I do appreciate the conversation. And this is, I'll say, only my 7th year. And one thing I've been learning, and this is a fascinating discussion from the satellite, should we say, as we look at this issue. And Senator Pogermiller, I appreciate your comments. I appreciate your perspective. But quite frankly, a lot of this really is about perspective. And it's about characterization. Now, we can talk about, and I've in my business life, I've done a lot of short-term borrowing. I have recharacterized my borrowing. I've rebalanced out my balance sheet as you look at structure. And I've done that my whole life, almost 30 years worth of businesses. And I'm my little business in Hayfield is not a state budget. But, you know, a lot of the characteristics are just exactly the same. I would have situations where I'd have a shortfalls operating-wise, and I would have an operating loan that I personally had at the bank, and I could borrow on it and pay back on it and back and forth. And actually what happens in lots of businesses is because what you're doing also is you're paying down long-term debt. You got your structure of your balance sheet, your financial structure. And when it gets out of balance, sometimes you get your long-term assets. You like to have long-term assets and long-term liabilities kind of balanced up. Well, over time, depending on how you've got your debt repayment structured, you can get out of balance with that. And sometimes I would take short-term debt and capitalize that into long-term to get things back in balance. So I'm kind of, this is a loose characterization, but I've got to relate the way I relate from where I come from. And that's what I'm trying to do here. And it's about the characterization, Madam Speaker and Senator and Commissioner. It's about the characterization. So I'm hearing about, the governor's got an appropriation bond, which I'm learning what those are. And, the Senate does not do the shift. The governor did the shift and some borrowing. The House ended up doing a mega shift, if you want to call it that, biggest in history, 7327. I was on a school board during the 90s, Senator Pogemiller, when you were helping to pay back those shifts. We all were paying those back. I remember as a school board member going, boy, is this going to get paid back? I remember thinking, well, at least it's a timing issue and not a cash issue, because that's a big deal. But it's still an issue as we looked at our budgets and tried to balance those things out. They did get paid back. And then, of course, in 03, in my first term here, when we did the big budget, I'm going, whoa, this is really something to be involved in this. And we shifted. And, of course, in the coming years, between then and now, we paid that back. And so here we are looking at, are we going to borrow long-term to take care of some short-term obligations? That's really what it's about, again, from the satellite, looking down on it. With, I think, the intention, with the full belief that the economy will recover to the point that's going to make some sense to do that. Now, I would characterize and I would submit that whether it's appropriation bonds for $1 billion, paid back however, whether it's a $1.2 billion shift or a $1.8 billion shift, which you did in the House, there's a $600 million difference there. So you compare up the $600 million against the $1 billion of appropriation. So it's, again, it's characterization of where the borrowing is coming from. It's borrowing, and does it get paid back? The shift from education, I will grant, is interest-free to the state. Okay, it gets paid by somebody, just not the state. And then, of course, we've got the idea of capital investment. And that characterizes as economic investment, economic stimulus. Madam Speaker, that's borrowing also. That's 15, 20-year borrowing. I don't remember how long our bonds go out. Are they 15 years?
20 years.
20 years. That's borrowing. And that's being characterized as stimulus. And that's adding to our debt service and getting us to a debt service probably approaching 3.5% to 4% of revenues, which is 25% higher than what we thought was kind of a benchmark. So I guess my point, Madam Speaker, and the reason I'm going on like this, it's about characterization. We all come from the perspective that we come from. And I submit that whether I portray it in the way I portray it, coming from where I come from and see it the way I see it, or the governor, or the House, or the Senate, I think it's a bit going beyond to say that somebody is, and this is about politics, I know that. And politics gets back to portraying, and it gets back to how you're going to do this. But I think in terms of posturing and positioning, I think it goes a bit beyond to say that the governor is doing that and somebody else isn't. Because in the end of the day, we're trying to do the same thing. And Madam Speaker, whether it's us on the House floor, whether it's the Senate floor, whether it's the Senate House, whether it's Governor Senate, and then you get the individual caucuses, it's all about positioning, and it's all about perspective, and it's all about how you portray what it is we're going to do. And at the end of the day, Representative Coles is absolutely right. It gets down to how are we going to get this thing accomplished, who are we going to borrow it from, and how much is it going to be? Are we going to borrow it from the bond market? Are we going to borrow it from the schools? Are we going to borrow it from the bond market for capital investment? That's what it's going to come down to. And I think as we move toward that, it's okay. We need to understand each other's positions, each other's perspective. But I think characterizing and accusing people of potentially or purposely misleading the public, again, it's about perspective and where you come from. And so thank you for indulging my little thoughts here, but I think it just sometimes helps to get things put back in perspective, maybe from someone who hasn't had a chance to be at the big table at all. And so that's what I'm saying.
Cole's
so, and we took that. I took that with respect. I didn't know.
That was Representative Cole's words. So
I didn't say big table.
No, I think
maybe Marty says that all the time.
I think so, Madam Speaker. Okay. And I didn't take any offense when I'm glad you're letting me sit here at the big table, even though I'm way down here on the end, Madam.
No,
Speaker.
I'd like you closer, Representative Cole's. Actually, I don't mind that at all.
Well, in my house, Madam Speaker, the big table does mean something too, because the big table is where the adults sit for Easter or Christmas dinners or whatever, and the little table is where the kids are. And sometimes I like to go to the kids' table, which is we call the little table, but that's not a bad place.
Representative
so.
Demmer, in my family, I'm still sitting at the kids' table, so
well,
you know
it's
I'm younger than everyone else. So,
well, and Madam Speaker, sometimes that's the more enjoyable place to be.
You know, Representative Demmer, I really appreciate your speaking up today, and I think what's interesting about this, and I just want to be very clear, I don't think anyone claimed that they're not engaged in putting their position forward here, did they? I don't think so. I mean, we obviously are going to put our position forward, and we're going to argue for our position quite vociferously in this. But I think the idea of an operating loan, I'm quite familiar with those. Farming, you know, the operating loan, that's sort of how it all works in farming. And so I just want to be very clear that the question is, in an operating loan, although it technically doesn't violate our state constitution, it gets awfully close to violating our state constitution. The idea that we would go out and borrow to put money in for operating and then pay that off into the future, that's very different than capital investment. Capital investment in what we usually talk about, the bond market, is when we go out and build a bridge that's going to be around for 50 years or a building that's going to be there for 40 years or whatever it is. And it's an asset that the state actually holds and could potentially, you know, sell or deal with. An operating loan is quite different. And, you know, I think the thing that sort of bugs me about this, to be honest, I'll just lay my cards on the table. The governor just keeps beating up the president over the whole idea of Ponzi schemes and debt in China and things like that. But, you know, who's going to buy these bonds, do we think? These bonds are going to, you know, be bought necessarily by you and me? These bonds are going to be bought in the bond market by all sorts of bondholders. I don't think we get to guess or decide. We can guess, but we can't decide who buys these bonds. So I think the thing that really kind of, you know, I'm just looking for a little consistency in logic and thought about this. And Representative Demmer, I'm sorry if you take offense today, but when the governor handed this out last week at his press conference, what obviously was a working document and not necessarily what we would all agree on as factual did show up in press stories.
I think it was, you know, Jim was just telling me, Madam
Mr.
Speaker. I think he referenced it, and then it was handed out to those who asked afterwards. So it wasn't actually handed out at the press conference, but some. So,
you know, it doesn't matter so much. It's just that I think that the
it's being
the,
factual like the senator wants me to.
The point, Representative Demmer, and I really do appreciate you speaking up. I think it's an interesting perspective, but I also think it's an interesting perspective that the people who formed our Constitution said that it was not a good idea to go out and have basically what we would call an operating loan into the next biennium. And essentially, a lot of us see the debt borrowing scheme as a modified operating loan. And that is fine, I think, in terms of the business operations of an individual or individual business, it's quite different when you're dealing with the entity of the state. And so I think that's where we're really trying to match up our perspectives here. If this is a route we want to go down or not. And I appreciate that a lot of people said this week, we're not so sure about this one. We're not so sure about this one. Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. Madam Speaker.
It's okay. That happens occasionally.
I walked in here this morning, and my first thought was, let the cameras roll and let the theater begin, because that's what it seemed like, and that's okay. That's what this place is all about. It's to some extent about theater and cameras and dynamics, and we're in that stage of the event, so to speak, this session, and it's going to get like this. But the Senate's got an honest budget. I'm not going to quibble about that. The House has got an honest budget, and I think, generally speaking, we think the governor's got an honest budget. And you can like these bonds or not like them, and that's your right. All I would say at this point is, kind of let's get on with it. Let's get the conference committees going, and we know that they're going to occur. I think if you're in a minority, you're not so much worried about what the governor thinks right now as you're worried about, okay, let's shake these conference committees out and let's get them going now in the next couple of weeks. And I think there's a May 7th deadline. But let's see in the end what's on the table. And we can sort of bump up against the governor and find out what his ideas are. It just seems like what we have going on here is what we would expect to have going on. But at the end of the day, we've got somewhere, I think, between May 7th and May 18th to get the real work done, and I'm hopeful that we will.
Well, Senator Senjum, I appreciate that. We're going to be meeting a lot at the end of the week here in this group and the beginning of next week to try to really publicly agree on the facts. It's very important, isn't it, to how we move forward. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Well, I just did want to make one final comment. I want to make perfectly clear that I wasn't speaking just about the appropriation bonds in my characterization when I talked about operating. I think that all of the entities are doing that. The governor does it in a sense. And this is all conversation. This is what this place is for. It's okay that we throw these things out, these ideas. I think, as Representative Cole said, we pass legislation the governor has to agree to, and obviously he has influence. He's got appropriation bonds, and he's got a shift, and that's borrowing. It's all borrowing. In the House, we have a big shift. That's borrowing. I mean, we've got $3.5 billion out there in 2014 for education that we got to deal with. That anything less than $3.5 billion in 4 years from now in the House's budget will be a cut. We can increase education funding $2 billion, I said this before, and that will be characterized as almost a $2 billion cut to education. So it's back to characterization. My point, Madam Speaker, is that, whether it's the Senate filling, there's no shifts, there's no borrowing, but there's tax increase. And to some of us, that's a permanent shift away from the public from the private to the public. Characterization, we're shifting dollars from the private sector to the public sector. In the House, we're doing some of that, and we're also doing the K-12 shift. The governor is taking appropriation bonds, borrowing, and also doing some shift borrowing. So my point is, from the satellite, all three bodies, if you want to look at the Senate, you want to look at the House, you want to look at the governor, are finding ways to shift and transfer and borrow. It's just how you characterize it. So I'm not saying the appropriation bonds are any different in terms of doing an operating loan than borrowing from K-12 education for $1.8 billion over the coming years. And in my strange and maybe simplistic way to look at it, that's kind of where I'm starting from the satellite view.
I think this could go on for a long time. Representative Coles, I'm going to call you. I do think there's one thing that we do have to say here, that, you do kind of characterize that the governor is some, removed figure in the enactment of laws. No laws get enacted without the governor's signature, and we all know that, with the exception of the override, and we have had one of those. But, to characterize that the governor really is removed from that process is not accurate. We actually hope to use this process. And when I mean this, the big table, I mean this part of it. We mean to use this large table or another room with the large table to have the discussion publicly about this, because it's healthy for the public to see what the choices are. The public will be more prepared for the hard decisions that are coming if they see publicly what the choices are. I think that's really important here.
Representative Coles.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And I guess that's, I'd like to, because I am interested in getting our work done. And so, Madam Speaker, you mentioned that this group is going to, this committee, this commission is going to be meeting several times over the next, in the upcoming week here. And I'm hoping, Madam Speaker, because I'm guessing that you and Senator Pogemiller or you and your staff and Senator Pogemiller and his staff probably have had some conversations about sort of the direction that we may want to take this. If we're going to be transparent with the public, I think it would be helpful to the minority in the House and the minority in the Senate if we have some foreshadowing of what's the process going to be? What are we going to be doing, Madam Speaker? You know, we showed up today, and the agenda item, and I understand we were having a discussion, and that I think that's good and useful, but the agenda is budget comparison discussion. And I think we've had a good discussion today. But if we're going to be doing something substantive, some advance notice for members of the minority, mm-hmm. members of the public, I think is something that I take you at your word, Madam Speaker, that you do want this to be a transparent process. And if we are going to use this big table for that, I think that out of respect to not just members of the minority but the public as well, that we need to have, you know, some rules of the game or advanced discussions about where we're headed. And so I don't know if you can speak to that now, Madam
sure.
Speaker, or if you can send some information out.
Representative Coles, I'd be happy to. It's, you know, the commissioner and the assistant commissioner need to get on a plane to go to Washington, and we worked very hard to work with them today to get them here this morning. And so the issue was working with them to see if we could fit this meeting in this morning as we also try to do session, which hasn't started because we're all down here, and have them here and also give them enough time so that they can make their flight to Washington, which is very important because they are going back to learn more about the federal recovery dollar process. We think that's really important. That's why we can't meet tomorrow, and we're not going to meet tomorrow. Otherwise, we would, because the commissioner has been designated by the governor to be the chief negotiator for the governor. And so we will meet again on Thursday. We may likely meet on Friday, is my guess here, at some point. I don't know about weekend meetings yet. And they certainly will be noticed, as this one has been noticed. And I believe that we can start to work through the process of agreeing on the basic facts. I mean, that's where we're going to start. We're going to start the basic facts. Who has what in each other's budgets? At what level? How does it look? And then moving from there. And that's the process. That's how the process usually has started in our meetings with the governor in the past. We just think it's probably okay to do this in public. There's nothing magical about it or special about it. It's in some ways kind of dry and can get a little heated every now and then, but it's mostly dry. But it's important work for people to understand that we're all understanding each other's budgets so we can move from there as we go forward. All right, we are adjourned, members.
Thank you.
Have a safe trip.